Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV's coverage of 1899. So this is the new show by the geniuses, and I'm going to apologize immediately for the pronunciation of these names, but I believe it's Baron Booda and Jean Tifrice. They are the masterminds behind, arguably, the greatest show on Netflix, my personal favorite show of all time, Dark. Yes. So this has been, if you've listened to any Bingetown stuff, we are huge fans of Dark. This has been probably one of my most anticipated shows, I would almost say, of my lifetime, because just like knowing that I watched Dark and then hearing that it was coming out, it was like, holy shit, this is going to be awesome. I guess just very quick background. So as you can tell from the title of the episode, I hope you read the title of the episode before you clicked on it. We'll be covering episodes 1 and 2 for this discussion. So before you continue, make sure that you've watched both of those episodes, because we'll start off with just some initial thoughts. We'll talk about the characters, because we've obviously been introduced to a whole new cast of characters. There's a decent amount of them. They're all kind of unique in their own ways. And then we'll just kind of let it rip and we'll bounce all over the place of all the things that we found interesting, which I'm sure there's really not a lack of over these two episodes. So I will go last because I just talked a lot. So I'll flip it over to one of you two if you want to give your initial thoughts, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, let me just reemphasize everything you just fucking said there. This is the most anticipated show ever. Dark is my favorite show of all time. The only thing I'm willing to put above Game of Thrones. And this show has been circled on my calendar. I've been waiting for the day until we can watch this. And the fact that we got some screeners for it, it's like I watched it within like an hour of getting the screeners is basically what I'm trying to say here. We are going to be referencing Dark a lot, but just a disclaimer out there, we will do our absolute best to not spoil anything. Yep. But if you haven't seen that show, you should go watch that show right now anyway, because it's impossible to not like it. If you can make it through, it's amazing. It's a mind fuck. And that's exactly what I'm expecting out of this show. So we're going to be constantly referencing cinematography styles that they use, where there's always like everything that they're showing has some level of importance, and then there's red herrings and there's double meanings and everything, and that's kind of the fun of the show. And what I'm promising you is, based off Dark, everything's going to click at one level, at one point, and just wait for it, because everything is going to click and it's going to be amazing.
We haven't had on this podcast, I don't want to say ever, but maybe ever, like something this anticipated, but also something this like in depth. We talked about how if we were ever going to cover Dark as like a rewatch podcast or a Rooks and Vets, we were like, I don't know if we can cover not one episode at a time, because there's so much to talk about. Now, after podcasting for 3 years, we know that, you know, Netflix, the way that they want to keep dropping episodes is a whole season at once, and to keep up with you guys, we are going to do 2 at a time, except maybe we'll see if we need the finale to be its own, who knows, but I don't know. I it seems like with 8 episodes, 2 at a time just seems right. It's 8 episodes, right?
Yes.
Oh man, so we have a lot. We're all going to be writing a million notes. We're going to be ready to dive deep into this one. I obviously love the first 2 episodes. I, just like Luke said, saw that email come in that we got the screeners and was like, oh my God, texted the group right away. Luke says he's watching right away. It's super anticipated for everybody. We actually have a couple members of the podcast, unfortunately, I guess it's our fault, that haven't seen Dark because we've been saying we want to kind of cover it as a Rooks and Vets, and they were going to be the rookies, but we're going to have to let them watch it soon, because if we don't cover Dark, you know. But this 1899 so far, I am so in. So let's just get started here.
Shit, I just will agree, obviously, again, like Luke, with everything you guys have both said. Dark is like the white whale of podcast shows for us. I feel like I'm like, I almost have butterflies just getting to the fact that we're doing 1899. It feels like this is almost like the pinnacle of the podcast. The interviews obviously have been like the greatest thing, but once we're done with this show, and if we can ever get to Dark, I feel like I could die happy us never podcasting again. So it feels fun that we're here. Yeah, but I totally enjoyed these 2 episodes. It's definitely just like smile to ear. Like, I just know that these motherfuckers are going to crush me over these 8 episodes, and I'm going to finish the finale and want to cry and restart it. So like I had said, I guess like about 2 minutes ago, we're going to talk about kind of all the characters, and then we'll dive into kind of what happens. So the first real character we get introduced to is going to be Mara. So Mara is just a redheaded badass, I guess is the best way to describe her. She doesn't really seem to have any fear of anything. She has a little bit of a past that we're not sure of. Mm-hmm. She has a little bit of, I'm not going to say mental instability, but she also studies the brain. She's obviously interested in the brain, and she has kind of this whole thing of where she's kind of convincing herself that she's not crazy. So I'm very interested to see where we go with Mara and kind of what she gets up to.
Yeah, she seems like she also has some kind of PTSD situation going on with her flashbacks. And, well, we think they're flashbacks and everything that's going on with her. So, continue for now.
just to add on to that, it's just a great little piece is what you guys are hinting at is those flashes we get. I think it's actually right in the beginning of all of the mental institution kind of things. And mm-hmm. I think we even see the colored beetle there. Yep. But this is just there to add that level of, did it happen in the past? It can always just be like, is 1899 all in her head? And like, you can always have that in the back of your mind. So it's just great mystery plot devices that they're using here. That seems to be where the end of like seasons are going to give us like little breadcrumbs into what's going on there. Because I think Mara is just the face of the show as of now, plus Captain Ike. It's probably those two.
And let me pause. Do we have any indication that this is a limited series or a multi-season show?
I actually just looked it up to confirm. And apparently they've said that it's like the potential to go multiple seasons, but they haven't confirmed anything yet.
Okay.
Apparently there was some misinterpretation on Instagram. And one of the creators commented and said that it'll have more seasons than one, but didn't confirm anything on like how many seasons.
Okay.
But knowing them, they know.
Right. They know the story.
They have to know because Dark was like the perfectly encapsulated three seasons rather. So three seasons for me is like perfect length.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
So if we get like 2 to 3 seasons, I think that would be perfect.
Yeah. Just to expand on that a little bit. When they sat down to write the first episode of Dark, they knew the ending. And I'm sure that's the same exact thing here. So like there's nothing that's going to be left up to interpretation. Like everything is going to be written out as long as it gets all the seasons to completion.
One last quick thing too about Mara. She has these wrist straps. Mm-hmm. So it seems like everything with the psych ward probably happened in the past. Mm-hmm. And maybe not the too distant past. It seems like almost maybe she like that just happened and she's escaping from it, because we do get later on that like she can't go back.
Right.
So obviously that will play into something in the future, which I'm very interested in. We can just move on, I guess, to the captain, because Luke actually had brought him up as he's pretty much the second main character. Anyone who's watched Dark knows this man. He plays a character in Dark, one of my favorite characters from Dark. He is just, when I saw his face on screen, like Jimmy, you had texted me and said, like, you basically like almost giving him a standing ovation. Yeah. I love this guy. He is a great actor. And he just, in this show, Captain, he obviously has a little bit of a sad past. We do find out that horribly his wife and children burned alive. It seems to be his wife's fault that she did it purposely. So it's going to be interesting, yet probably also heartbreaking, watching him navigate the grief that he has with whatever the fuck is going on. And that's kind of playing with him almost in that grief.
Yeah, I had to text you, Kyle. I really did. And it's funny because I didn't know that you hadn't started yet when I texted you, which I didn't say who it was. I just said some Dark alumni, let's go. But I specifically, we've talked about this 1,000 times. Like, I don't look at IMDb. I really didn't know much about the cast besides our boy Alexander Vyam, because we talked to him about 1899 when we talked to him about Wheel of Time and The Last Kingdom. A couple other cast members here and there. But I like that. Everything is a surprise for these kind of shows. So I left it out there. And when he shows up on screen, I was just like, yes, let's go.
He's going to be so fantastic as our lead like mystery plot driver here. One thing that just stuck out to me is that his backstory is kind of like Leonardo DiCaprio in Inception, right? Where the wife kind of just kills herself and her kids. Yeah. And it's kind of just haunting him and driving everything he does going forward. But he does have this little bit of, I don't want to say morality, but whatever he's doing, he's trying to figure out why the company that owns these ships is being all sketchy. So that's a cool part of his personality where he wants true answers and he's not just going to do the easy things. And that's always fun. And I don't know if you guys got the vibes here, but I was feeling Jamie Lannister. Like, he kind of looks like Jamie Lannister with the beard, you know, he's got I like the little gray
the white
patch thing that he's got.
Yeah.
Going on. Yeah, too.
And the scars, are those scars always there? They were there in Dark, right?
That's a good question, actually.
I think they might be actual scars. I don't quote me on that, but Luke, I need to jump in here for a second because it has been so long since I've seen Inception, but did you just mix Inception and Shutter Island in one?
No, because in Inception, the whole thing is that his wife...
But I thought the kids...
Wait, did I actually?
Yeah, because
no,
the kids aren't... The wife... There's no kids in Inception, right? The Shutter Island is when she drowns kids.
You're so right, but doesn't the wife kill herself in Inception, too? She, like, goes out in the... Am I just thinking of Shutter Island? I'm totally just thinking of Shutter Island.
Doesn't he kill her in Shutter Island after she kills the kids? And that's why he's in the institution?
It's been so long.
I know.
Since I've seen both of those movies, unfortunately.
Inception, I just keep thinking of... So Inception's obviously Talia al Ghul also from The Dark Knight Rises, and she's the shit. I loved her when she was in Inception, and I just keep remembering, like, in his dreams that she's, like, falling, and I think she kills herself. Now,
you're right.
I'm
it was
pretty
Shutter
sure...
Island.
Shutter Island, he kills the wife because she drowned the two kids.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yes, so yeah. I'm looking it up, and yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Okay, okay. Yeah. it's an easy thing to do. Same actor.
Leo, you know, yeah.
Right?
Okay, so we can move on, I guess, from the captain. And now we kind of get into everyone has a little bit of similar standing, but I'll say that we do get a lot more of Angel. And, oh my God, I'm going to mispronounce his name.
Ramiro.
Yeah,
Ramiro.
I would say then maybe some of the other families by like maybe a hair. So we can talk about them a little bit. I liked their introduction a lot, how Mrs. Wilson, and we'll get to Mrs. Wilson, but she kind of comments that Angel just looks horny. I thought that was really funny because she's kind of swaggering there. And he also says something in his first scene that I was thinking about throughout the entire two episodes of he's like, no one here can fucking understand me. It doesn't matter what I say. And they all talk to each other in different languages all the time. Yeah. I thought that was funny and not frustrating, but it just kind of made me laugh every time they tried to have a combo with each other.
I think we should bring up right now, because like you're saying, the whole language thing, while we talk about these people, their ethnicities or their ethnicities, I guess, because it is amazing how true that the actors are to whatever they're playing. Like Dark, for those that don't know, is going to be a mostly German show. It's mostly subtitles. They sprinkle some English in there at times. So Captain Ike, who's from Dark, is German, and that's perfect.
I honestly didn't know that he could speak English. He may be the one that dubs, or he might put his own voice in Dark. I have no idea, but I guess we would have to look that up. But when he started speaking English, I was like, oh, okay, cool.
And so these guys here, Ramiro and Angel, they're supposed to be from Spain. We later find out that Ramiro's he's Portuguese, so like same area. Because I'll bring it up later too, because the Danes are like, we know the Danish actor who plays Tom Marilyn, and he is Danish and from The Last Kingdom too, so that's cool. But Ramiro and Angel, the problem with doing these type of shows in sprints, like with two episodes, is this would have been a fun conversation to have after episode one of what we thought was going on there, because by the middle of episode two, I was like, I had so many good predictions that came true about these guys.
Yeah, me too.
But they like get settled by the end of episode two. So not much to say there, but Angel seems like one of the people I hate the most so far.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Ramiro in their last scene, when it turns hot and heavy, kind of nails him a little bit, where he's like, your mother always says that you just use people. He does have that kind of arrogant swagger about him all the time. And he does seem to think that the young Danish kid, he almost seems like not that he sees him as property, but it's kind of like that, where he's like, it's like an inevitability that he'll get him, essentially, just because he wants him. They did do a good job of, because I don't think I would have gotten to like the actual truth between the two of them, but I was definitely thinking that there's no way that Ramiro was actually a priest.
I just have like all those weird thoughts in my head at all times. Like I was like, they're banging. I don't know at what point, but I have a note that says they're banging on my thing. That's great. Kathleen would probably be proud of me just because she always she always has people banging and figures out the relationships between them. She even figured out the actual incestuous relationship in a show that I'm not going to say what show is, because that's a spoiler, but we covered it on the podcast. Kathleen caught that one, and we were all like, no way. She still figured it out.
Did you guys get another show that we cover here, Peaky Blinders? Angel reminds me so much of Uncle Jack, just like the way he looks.
Oh,
literally,
I
the
can
actor,
see that. Yeah.
His face looks like. But then it doesn't really time up with, because Uncle Jack's Irish, but then he's,
right.
he's, yeah, so. But they look similar.
Yeah, they look similar, I think.
So I guess the question is going to be, because this is something that we can speculate about, of, and we'll actually probably have to speculate about this with every character, but like, what is it do we think that they're running from, first of all? Because they are worried about going back.
Right.
I think the first time we kind of see Angel flustered is when they see that the ship's turning. And he had got done saying whatever.
I'm
like,
chill, bro.
Yeah, like God turned you into a sheep, but he turned me into a wolf, baby. Like, I'm a fucking Lobo over here, baby. And then he like looked to the ship's turning. He's like, why is the ship fucking turning?
Yeah, I can't go back, bro. I can't go back.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that'll be interesting. I want to find out about everyone. But
yeah, I kind of took it like, I don't remember. I would have to look through my notes. I don't remember at what point. It was kind of early and it was like it wasn't a deserved, but it was like me being cynical, just being like, well, not cynical, but just thinking too much, being like, all right, I think that they're probably con men or something and they're banging. But like, I took it like they're just like criminals, con men maybe or something. And, you know, I think that a lot of us would have guessed that he was pretending to be a priest pretty early.
That was an episode one guess, but I did not necessarily think that they were hooking up with each other. That was not on my radar at all.
Yeah. And it's interesting with the servant thing. You'd wonder why they would need to hide that. I mean, yeah. It seems like that's something that would, I guess, easily identify them to maybe someone else.
Yeah, Angel is the higher class and Ramiro is the servant, but they're also lovers. Yeah, I don't know. And really, I guess they could still be con men or something, but they have to be either busted for something or thinking that they're busted and that's why they have to get the hell out.
Yeah.
My only guess is that I don't really know what the political landscape of 1899 was in Spain, but if it was straight up because they are gay, like maybe that's part of the reason. I don't know, though.
Right. I mean, if they were outed or something back then, yeah, they would probably have to get out. But also, are you sure that is actually in 1899, dude?
I'm going to go with yes. I don't think that they're going to go that way.
Okay. All right. Well,
that's my initial take.
We'll get to it.
But yeah, I mean, they did make like a point, and maybe because it could have been the whole Peter Griffin, like they said it like 1899, they did make a point right in the beginning to say like October 19th, 1899. And she says, I'm not crazy. So
yeah.
I could definitely see it.
But is she crazy?
I want to go with yes, but also no.
Yeah,
yes would be more fun. Yes would be way more fun. I'll say that.
Unreliable narrator just turns it all upside down.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about more when we get to the Danish family. If we want to just maybe even talk to them next, I guess there's a little bit of a natural bridge there between Angel and the Danish family. It kind of starts off hot a little bit with this guy. I didn't when the brother, his name begins with a K.
Crusher.
Okay. I had it at Crester. Yeah.
I want to say, I think I wrote down Crester as well.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds right.
So he kind of barges in the beginning, and then we get to see that Mara is kind of like the only nice person. We get introduced to that random doctor, Dr. Reginald or whatever his name was. He's still eating his tart, doesn't give a fuck. Mara, being the good woman that she is, actually goes to help them. And then we meet this whole cast of people that are kind of, they're not stowaways. They're just, I guess they're in like economy class.
They're non-VIPs. Yeah.
Yeah. They're in economy class, like us stuffed in the back of Spirit Airlines.
Yeah.
And we see that his sister, who we find out later, his name is Tove. She's pregnant. And at this point, we get to see Alexander Vuillaume, who is the priest. We get to see their mother. It seems like their mother, who we don't get a name for. They have a little sister whose name is Ada. So we kind of get this whole cast of characters, these Danish people that are underneath the ship, separated from all our first class passengers.
We have a couple people getting met in this first scene before we even meet the Danish people, where, you know, Mora is sitting there by herself. And then we have what's this lady's name? She's the one I missed writing down.
I believe it's Mrs. Wilson.
Yeah. Okay. So Mrs. Wilson comes in, and obviously Moore is not having that. She doesn't want none of that. But this is where we get the information that the doctor's bullshit. You know, Mrs. Wilson says that like this doctor sucks. And we also get the information that Mora, as a woman, cannot actually practice. She just studies, and she studies the brain. And Kyle, you brought that up earlier. I believe we've already seen it at one point, but she has the book, the textbook with the brain that she looks at a lot.
Yeah, this was badass, honestly. Something that I thought about through both episodes, because it takes place so far in the past, I guess you could say, of like all of the quote, like the technology, like even when she's following Crestor And like the way that she has to unlock the door and like open the door is like so like old school elevator. Yeah, like the way that she just like has to like stick like the tube onto her belly to like listen. The medicine, I mean, she does. She works it out. She flips the baby around, and it was just crazy to think about. Like that's was like the height of medicine at that time. Yeah.
I mean, and I was literally just like, the cups on the stomach, and I was like, how do you know that's not her heartbeat? Like,
I
was like,
yeah, I would. But,
it's also, I guess we should be talking about the fact that Anchor specifically was not down with Moore being there, you know, and I believe the mother was like that as well, right? They did not want her there. The brother brought her down. Ada was taking a nice little, you know, she enjoyed having Moore down there. She wanted to talk to her. She said she wants to be a doctor as well. So she was happy she was there. And she was kind of, like you talked about it, Kyle, you know, they're talking in different languages, but she seemed to be the translator, but wasn't really, because she wasn't actually translating anything. But she seemed to be the one that they were talking back and forth. But yeah,
she's smart.
Yeah, well, she is smart. She's going to be a doctor one day.
She was smart. Yeah, because I mean, Dave, I mentioned a little later when in episode two, when her and Ada and Crestor are, she's kind of like helping him kind of like clean up a little bit. And she mentions that she had been in school.
Right.
And then they weren't going to let her continue school when they got to New York, because we learned the family is going to New York to establish a church. Obviously, there'll be more to come. We get Anchor. He is kind of, he's helping everyone pray. He's standing up. They're all praying. So they obviously look to him as some type of leader of the Danes and the people that are in this economy class. So I'm really interested to see kind of where that goes with him, because we've seen with the choices that the captain makes that people aren't really about the choices. So we might get into, maybe we're going to start creating factions and a little bit of mutinies and rebellions potentially in the ship. And it'll be interesting to see kind of where Anchor potentially leads all of the Danish people and the other passengers in the lower ranks.
Got nothing else to add for the Danes.
We mentioned a little bit, but Crestor and Angel obviously have this very weird thing going on. It was interesting that Tova, when she finds the cigarette container that Angel gave to Crestor, she kind of immediately goes up to the deck and spikes in front of him. That just seemed incredibly drastic of her. I respect it. She's you know, looking out for her brother and standing up to Angel, but it was just, they yelled at him for going up to the upper decks, and then she just kind of just stormed right up there and did that. So
she's a pregnant lady. You got to be nice, man. But fair. But she also does have this conversation with Crestor where she's like, you promised me this, you know, so there's something in their past as well. Like everyone's got some kind of past we're going to figure out in the next six episodes after first two.
For sure. We talked about her a little bit, Mrs. Wilson. We don't get so much, I would say, about her, but more of the two Cantonese women that are with her is kind of the more interesting part about Mrs. Wilson. That was a shock to me, that when she went to their door, it was almost like a master servant relationship. And we do find out later on that she's essentially pimping out these women, specifically the woman who was wearing the makeup. And I got her name because
Ling Yi.
Ling Yi, yes. And I just confirmed that because I trust you. I'm not actually looking at it with my eyes, but I do trust. Oh, yes, Jesus. Ling Yi. Okay. Now you're good. Yeah.
I was going to say that's real bad. Yeah. Not right.
No, no worries. You were correct. So that is not something I expected out of her at all. So I'm interested to see, because she is an enterprising businesswoman. She notices the French guy, who we'll talk about probably directly after this, immediately sees a mark in him. He's not happy with his marriage. Mm-hmm. She settles that, and it seems like she's pushing this exotic little bird. So her and the two Cantonese women, I think, again, they have a past as well. We'll find that out. I'm very interested in them as well.
I wasn't expecting her to be, you know, whatever you want to say, selling them or whatever, because when you first meet them, I thought it was going to be like a secret or a surprise or whatever, that she goes to their door, and the fact that they are in some kind of communication that, again, they're together. She is with them and they know each other. And she's saying, you know, tell that one to look a little bit more happy. Like, I just thought that they were like, you know, maybe her stowaways or something, not necessarily stowaways, but you know what I mean? Like getting them on the ship to get them out of where they needed to be. I wasn't expecting them to be like, quote unquote, like who she's selling, until we find that out later when she brings it up to the Frenchman.
I thought I was tripping when they said Cantonese as like the dialogue she was speaking. I was like, do I just like not remember like what the Japanese culture looks like? I feel like I'm so ingrained in that I should. And then it made sense that she's trying to play herself off as Japanese, even though she's not. which is going to come into some awkward things. I mean, it almost came into an awkward situation with Lucien later, but that's the part that I was like hanging on. I don't really understand how that's going to play a part. It's definitely going to be part of the reason of why they're running, but I don't see how that could come into play again. And Mrs. Wilson just seems like a schemer. She's like a tab on every single person, it seems like. So she might be good for gossip. And if she's like as long as she's not like super anti Mara, like she could tell us some good stuff as audience members that I'm sure she's gonna be fun on screen.
Yeah, I like that, actually, thinking about that, like a schemer and then like a source of information. But I do wonder, she seems too smart to not know that they're not Japanese. Do you think she knows, or do you think it's like a classic?
Knows. I think she knows. I think she's part of that. Yeah. Okay. I think, yeah.
They do have a quote. The older, I would assume she's the older one, the one who's not wearing the makeup, essentially says, "We only had to pretend for a little while longer." So again, another group of people. Everyone on the ship is desperate to get to New York for one reason or another. Doesn't look like it's working out so swell at the end of episode 2. So we'll see kind of what is the fallout from that. So we can move now to the French couple. We get their names. It's Lucien and Clement?
Yeah, Clements.
We had Clements. There's an S in there, I think.
There's a C. It's a C.
Clements, maybe?
Clements, yeah.
We can go with Clements.
I have French girl equals Clements. Clements. So whatever.
We'll work on it for the next episode. How about that?
Yeah.
So we learn, well, Mrs. Wilson tells us that they are honeymooners who obviously seem to have married for the wrong reasons. Then they tell us that they did marry for the wrong reasons. It was some type of arrangement. He is very kind of wired and high stress, it seems. Mm-hmm. They don't have very good sex, which is bad for the both of them, obviously. But she, I think, is the much more interesting character.
Oh, yeah. Because
we get when he tells her, like, you can drop the act, your parents aren't around, and he leaves, like, her face completely changes.
And she smiles, mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah. She's going to be awesome, I think.
Yeah, which is interesting. And then she does have an interesting conversation with Jerome in episode 2. So I think I'm way more excited about her than I am about him.
Agreed. How I'm quick so did you guys notice
you guys
that?
Agree with that.
Wait, you
really?
Like, you,
no,
what,
no,
you
no. Like
better?
I'm saying like I think she's like the most interesting character, and I didn't want you guys to completely agree.
Oh, you wanted to gatekeep? You wanted to gatekeep Clemens from us, you fucker. Yeah.
So, how quick or how soon did you guys notice her earrings?
Right away.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So I really want to know what her deal is.
I think Lucien is my least favorite character. Like I hate him the most so far of anybody, even like more than Angel so far. And then she's the most interesting, and it's that smirk plus the earrings, and that's all I need to see. Like she literally could be the one that's in on the videos at the end. That's the level of intrigue I'm putting in her off of these little scenes, and I have no idea what's going to go on with her and Jerome, but they could bang, who knows.
Yeah, that's not the first time that we've had a character's meet for the first time on the show and been like, do I know you? You look familiar. So I'm very interested to see how that plays out. Well, doesn't look like it's going so well for Jerome. We can even jump to Jerome right now because it doesn't look like it's going so well for Jerome the last time we left him.
He's part of the team that goes, and I mean, we're kind of technically skipping all that, but do you want to talk about that part or do you just want to talk about his ending?
I think we should just talk about him as a character.
He walks in on Oleg, right?
Yes.
Oleg, yeah. So he walks in on Oleg and he's like, I'm starving, man. I'm not going to do anything. Just give me the bread. Like, I didn't know what he was going to be, but it's obvious that he was faking and he was not actually working as a crew member. He's not actually in what is it called? The room where they're all doing the coal.
Maybe just the engine room. We'll call it that.
Yeah, the engine room at the bottom. Yeah he's not the
Looks
same.
Looks like Mordor.
Right. He's not the same profession, if you want to say, as Oleg, but he did come in, like when you first see him, he is dirty as hell, like he's been in that coal room, and maybe that's where he's been stowing away, and then he changes the outfit, and then he goes to Oleg, and then he takes the bread, and then that's where they're found before we jump to when they're going to go on the mini ship or the mini boat to go over across.
Well, I thought that was kind of confirmed, because that one first scene you see with Oleg when he's all the way up in the, like, checking out the what's going on with the coal, and he's looking at the picture, he like hears something rattle, and then you don't see what that is. I'm pretty sure that was
so that's
like
supposed to be
around.
Jerome hiding in the coal.
I think
okay,
so.
That's fine. I like that.
I did not catch that, so that's a good catch.
I caught the movement, but I didn't think that's what it was. But that makes sense to me now that you're saying it.
That's a good connection.
These two guys are just like, they're going to be, honestly, I feel like they're both going to be pretty safe, because usually the poor, like, working class people of these type of mysteries are going to be there for, like, at least until the end. I think they're just like good variations compared to all these first class people that we have going around the ship, especially Oleg, because he seems like, not, I'm not going to say he's like one of the main characters, but he is getting a lot of screen time for having almost nothing yet. We just know he has that picture of the Statue of Liberty. He has a dream to go to New York. We're going to find out like about him. Maybe he's just him and Jerome squad up and they're just, they, I don't know. I really have no guesses yet, because we haven't gotten a lot, but we've gotten enough cinematography around them that we know that they're going to play a big part.
Yeah, that's a great point in pointing out how often he's been in the show. Yeah. At first, I thought it was going to be the two guys that they show, because they do show them first, like shoveling the coal and everything. Mm-hmm. But we do learn, I mean, right. He is like the guy that they get to unstick the coal receptor machine, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, the captain now has some level of trust in him. He gives him a mission that he can't tell anyone to do. So it seems like maybe he'll be someone that our captain leans on a little bit. Seems very, he just seems like a good guy, like you said. Mm-hmm. But Jerome, on the other hand, has some bad intentions, it seems like. While Oleg seems very innocent and has good intentions, Jerome's intentions don't seem not bad to me. I just, like, he is out for something, it seems like. And I'm just very interested. He sneaks into the French people's room. He picks their lock very easily. And then he drops that military medal on there. And then once that happened, I was like thinking back on everything else that's happened with him. And then we do get the fight. This guy was clearly in the military. Like, he seems like a soldier and he could definitely throw some fucking hands. So I'm interested in that.
If we're going to talk about that really quick, when he goes into the French couple's room and he drops the military piece, you know, what is it called?
Which is like a star.
Like the Medal of Honor or whatever.
Yeah, like a medal. Yeah, like the military medal, whatever you want to say. Puts it on the desk. And then he hides under the bed and she walks in. She sees it and puts it back in her drawer, right?
Ooh.
Like, wouldn't you be like, why is that there? When we're watching from under the bed, doesn't she just look at it and put it in her and back in the drawer?
I don't know. If I'm honest, I don't think I caught that.
Yeah, me neither.
The way that she did it made it seem like to me that he like pulled it out of the drawer. It made me second guess what I was seeing, because my first take was the way you took it, where he just sneaks in, breaks in, puts the medal down. She walks in, he hides under the bed. She goes in the other room, he disappears. But then because she just looked at it and put it away, I thought he like pulled the drawer out, took the medal out to maybe be like a sign or something, to be like, yeah, think about that, you know, to show them something. Because again, he's French, they're French. Then he hid and then he disappeared. But I don't know why she would pull that medal out off the desk and just put it right back in the drawer. And like, wouldn't she be like, where the hell did this come from?
That is an interesting question. I don't know. I definitely took it as him trying to like leave a message.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it made me have to rewind. And of course, like an idiot podcaster, I did not rewind. I just wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, it made me want to rewind, thinking that he was sending a message by stealing it out of the drawer and putting it on the table.
You know what? That is a perfect way to get some engagement. So if you are listening and you saw that scene and you saw it a certain way, why don't you tweet it at us at Bingetown TV?
There it is.
Yeah, and let us
know. We'll know the answer by the time.
Maybe I actually did rewind and I do know the answer, but I just wanted to have a cheap plug for Bingetown TV Twitter. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that would be very sly of you. But I think I'm willing to also, even if maybe she did put it away, maybe it's something only that Lucien would recognize. Maybe she just thought Lucien had left it out and just tucked it away.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It's meant for him, not for her. And to her, it was
right,
nothing.
Right.
Okay, so.
Nice character here?
Yeah, if you want to, you know who it is, because I don't, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
Well, I was just going to say it's definitely worth just, we don't have to talk specifics because his scenes are very plot centric. But Daniel, I want to talk about this new guy, Daniel, who doesn't really get introduced until the last two or three scenes of the first episode. But this guy's just a creeper. He looks like he's the one that controls this colored beetle. That seems to be a very important piece of this show. And I don't want to talk too much again because we don't have a lot to talk about yet. But this guy is definitely like just right now antagonist number one in my head, because especially with the little Danish girl thing that happens.
Yeah, he's got that look to him. He's got a great classic, like, he's not overly villainous, like not cartoonly villainous, but I'm really excited. I think he's going to come out with, like, he seems like he has good potential for monologues. Like he's going to hit us with some type of like villainous philosophy that like I'm kind of going to be like, oh, you know what? Like he's kind of got a point there. Like I don't like him. I don't fuck with him, but my man has a point. That's the vibe.
He knows the most about what's going on for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He is the other one where we hear what you were discussing, Kyle, when you said Mora says, do I know you? You look kind of familiar. Yes. She says that to him.
Yeah.
And he says no.
And we do find out
destroyed some of my theories, but we'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah, okay.
I have a theory, but I feel like it's only because of Dark. Not the Dark. Yeah, right. Not because that's the not the Dark is the answer, but I'm just saying the way Dark went and the way their storytelling goes, it makes my brain just like think of weird shit.
All of my theories are Dark based.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay, so I guess at that point we've kind of given a decent rundown of everyone, at least to my satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we obviously didn't get to everything about everyone, but now we can kind of talk more about potentially plot things.
Right.
Overarching plot things. I feel like we've kind of touched on a lot of like the interpersonal potential conflicts mm-hmm. that are there, but now we kind of really want to talk about the mystery. That's kind of why we're all here. That's what's going to keep us going.
Before we get into the first thing, though, we definitely let's just do it right now and talk about that trippy title sequence because, wow.
Yeah, baby. Let's go.
They went all out with it. That destroyed House of the Dragons title sequence, in my opinion. It looked so cool.
In my opinion, I think Dark's – I like Dark's song better, definitely.
Yeah,
I agree. Iconic. I agree with that. Yeah.
I was a little – not jarred, but I was shocked of how, like modern, I would say, the song sounded.
The end of each episode of the first two end it with like a modern riff.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Dark one was like a piano and like a girl singing softly about some weird shit. And that was kind of like really fit like, oh, fuck, this show's weird. And this
freaking me out, man.
Yeah. This one didn't give me that feeling, but not a big deal.
Yeah.
Visuals are great, though. All right. So I guess it's going to be a little tough to kind of get us going, maybe. But essentially, I guess like overarching background, we are on a ship called the Cerberus. And the ship, the Prometheus, has been missing for 4 months. We get this weird message that's coming to us. We find out that it's coordinates, just over and over and over again. Coordinates, coordinates, coordinates. Captain, what is it? Ike, right? Ike?
Yes. The captain is what his name is.
Being the good guy, sends us over to the ship. And now he makes a decision to go onto the ship, which we can kind of just take it from the beginning of that decision. Almost, he kind of gets a squad together and Mara immediately volunteers. I just thought it was really funny how, of course, when they find the ship, it's nighttime.
Right.
It would have been so much better. Yeah. If they found it like right at sunrise, they have a whole day of light to explore it. But naturally it's nighttime. So we end up actually losing some people from the original rescue squad and we gain Olek and Jerome at that point.
Well, for me specifically, when we first see the coordinates, whenever I think of, you know, we're talking about 1899, whether it's definitely that time period or not, whatever, we don't need to get into that now, but old times, thinking about how terrifying it seems to just be on this boat going, you know, after, you know, the Prometheus disappears and having these coordinates just going over and over and over and over and over again and being like the captain and the ship crew being like, are we going to go to these coordinates? Really? Like we're going, we're actually doing that. And side note, I just kept thinking of Lost when this was happening, but so I was just like, this is ominous as hell. These coordinates just over and over. You don't know. It doesn't say it's the Prometheus. It doesn't say help. It just says the coordinates.
That was something I didn't think about when the captain comes and tells everyone when Angel's like, well, they didn't ask for help or anything. Right. And I immediately obviously agreed with the captain, like, we should go. Like, yeah, definitely. Let's go to the coordinates. And then he said that. And I was like, oh, that is a great point. They totally didn't ask for help or anything. It's way creepier when he says that than it then just like kind of sending out the coordinates.
It's also, though, very interesting that his clap back at some point is, listen, this company that we're using uses a certain type of communication, and that's how we know it has to at least most likely be the Prometheus, and that is why I am going, because it's, what was it, 7 hours away, and he said that only something like the Prometheus in this technology that we use for our company could reach us. So yes, we don't know it's the Prometheus, but we have a good chance or a good idea that it is. So me being the good guy that I am, I'm going.
This is going to connect to this, but let me just get this little thing out, because this is how a lot of my theory talks, and anytime I'm making comments about time fuckery, it's coming from that. So for those that don't know about Dark, again, I'll try not to harp on this too much, but you find out pretty quickly it's like a time show. It's like a time travel kind of show. So a lot of the theories that we're probably going to be coming up with, especially because of how the first two episodes have already gone with like the triangle, like time, like we're going to be connecting a lot of our guesses to, is this like in the past? Is it in the future? Are we seeing like a loop of people again, just until we get more information? So there's that piece of it. And I'll say something right after this next piece. And I don't know if it's like done explicitly, but this is obviously just screaming Bermuda Triangle mystery, right? Bermuda Triangle vibe. Like even the symbol that's on the earrings and then the floors, and like that's just like the whole thing. So everything's gonna be like that. When we found out about the name of the ship, like Prometheus versus Cerberus, like I was trying to like see, like, is there any way like the Prometheus, if you scratch off some pieces like with rust over time, it says Cerberus or something like that, you know, where it could be
right
the Cerberus in the future or
that's
the past.
Cool.
I'm looking at it right now, bro. I can't do it. I really can't do it.
You have the words written out right now.
Yeah. Like, so
if you take Prometheus and you just like erase it and start using other letters, you get Cerberus from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true.
That's a good way to get there if you want.
But of course, like that's part
actually
of
really
it.
Cool, though. I like that, Luke.
Right. Like that's what I'm going to be guessing all the time. Like I'm going to be guessing, like, is this little boy Daniel?
Yep. That was mine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like, like all these little things, but like something that you find out right off the get before the title sequence even comes is like, you see the Mara visions. I think you find out about her brother here already, right? Like she says, she doesn't know if it's, or she does know it's from her brother, right? Like the letter.
Well,
that
she's
says,
assuming
what's lost will be found.
It does say your brother on it.
It does. But she says too that later, like, I'm assuming it's him. Does she say he's supposed to be dead or he's just missing?
I thought he was on the ship.
He was on the Prometheus. Yeah.
Okay, well, she says that she thinks she says, I think he's on the Prometheus.
Yeah.
That's what she says. That's her actual line. So,
and that's going to be a big baseline for just everything surrounding her and her motivations, and like even connecting to Captain Ike, because I think he also has a letter from the brother, but we don't find out until episode two that he doesn't know who it's from, right? Like he's just getting the letter. And I was under the impression that she was holding her mouth shut about like, oh, my brother was on there and they were going to connect the dots, like, and he knew her, but it's not the case. So whatever her brother is, however he comes into play, like I originally thought Daniel was the brother, but then when they see each other and says it's that's ruled out right away, because she obviously would have recognized her brother, even if it was slightly in the future or the past, however it is. But the reason I just wanted to clear that up is because I feel like a lot of the times we're theory talking, it's going to be around the Bermuda Triangle, time travel, and just like stuff like that.
And to what I was saying with me thinking that the same exact theory you did, Luke, whereas like, is Daniel the little kid in the future or the past or however you want to say it? I thought of that because she says, you look familiar. Do I know you? And I was thinking maybe she's looking at the little kid and being like, oh, he looks familiar because it's like the older version of him. But, you know, whatever. And also, I do want to bring up the fact that, like Luke said, it's not a spoiler to say that Dark does all this time travel kind of stuff, or, you know, it deals a lot with time. We talked about how freaking phenomenal this show is, and they are one of the best shows and movies that have used time travel and made it make sense with no plot holes. So you can trust that this is going to be fine if that's what it is. Also, I have one more thing that I want to say about the brother, Luke, and I think this actually might be something we need to talk about that could mess with what you're saying. Is I honestly do think that she doesn't know that he was definitely on the Prometheus, because her line is he's been missing and I think he was on the Prometheus. Like, I think he went on the Prometheus, because like you were saying, wouldn't she have been like rushing around that ship being like, where's my brother? Where's my brother? Like if she thought he was definitely on there.
She also wants to keep it on the down low. Like, why wouldn't she also? Like, I feel like she has a little bit of relationship with the captain. And when he gives her or shows her that he has a letter, I feel like she's trying to keep her about her brother on the DL.
And Luke, just said that, like, her not running around looking for him could just be like, I want it to be on the DL and trying to keep my cool about it. But I just think that she's not positive that he was on there. And I might just be reading into that differently. Again, homies, if you're listening, Bingetown TV, Twitter, Instagram, whatever you want, hit us up. Let us know.
Yeah, this will get onto YouTube. So if you're watching on YouTube,
hit us up on the comments.
Yeah, comments are nice too. And also, I guess just to bring up the quote, since we're talking about this, when what the letter says to her is that I found out what our father did. Meet me in New York. Don't trust anyone. Which is
DTA,
like
DTA, baby.
Which That's is my tough. Motto.
In that vision, she says father, like the shadowy figure that you don't really see. She says father. And then also the room number that she's getting tortured in is the same cabin number that she has on the ship, which is which goes back to the is everything going to be in her mind, which if they do make it that, I'm sure that they're going to make it satisfying and work for me. Yeah.
I just took it like the brother and the sister were experimented on by their father. Is that how you guys took it? Or
I would say that that seems like and this is not like a not like a backhanded compliment, but that seems like the easiest kind of conclusion to jump to.
Yeah, no, no, I know exactly what you're saying. Like, that's the,
And I don't
that's
trust,
a straight line.
Yeah, I don't trust what they want me to think. Like, I'm thinking that, and I don't trust it because I know these motherfuckers, and that's too easy.
I would be very interested to see her reaction if she sees the bug, the beetle, because that's in the flashback or the flash that we see. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason why I was thinking she was being experimented on and her dad has something to do with this entire thing. And even Daniel, you know, I don't know if he worked for the dad or, you know, a million different things. And we don't even need to get into that. But her seeing the bug would her reaction would be very interesting because that
she does
show,
see the bug.
Like,
when they go onto the ship, she sees the bug, right? She follows the
bug.
Leads
her to the boy.
Leads her to the little boy who's locked in the cabinet. When they board the Prometheus.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I thought that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause I took that. I was taking that like she was, no, that's true. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. Yeah. Cause I was taking it like she was she thought she was hallucinating, just like the captain was hearing his daughter.
Yes.
But
it seems like there's something with the bug that will trigger something. Cause it does seem again like, I mean, is it the bug? Because he also grabs, and this is obviously we're talking about now when they're on the ship, when they actually board the Prometheus, because he grabs that little like thing, like the wrist wrap or headband.
Yeah, that was
that
was literally his daughter's.
Yeah. So I can't tell if like, is the bug just her and his is the wrist? Like, I'm just interested in, that's just throwing it completely out there. He also sees the bug and it goes, but it's just interesting.
Well, Ada follows the bug to her death.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the problem with the bug, which is hilarious to me, is Daniel swam. Yeah, he had to have swam, right? From Prometheus to our boat. I mean, he didn't they would have seen another boat, like a mini boat. So that bug in his pocket, that thing made it. That thing made it. He was clinging on for dear life. Yeah. But I don't know. I was taking it like, and no, I mean, I probably shouldn't have taken it like that. Now that we know that the bug technically is actually leading other people and not just Mora, but I took it like later he says this boat, there's something going on with it. I heard my daughter, like shit's happened. I even saw her. Like, I took it like it was like a hallucination just bringing her to the little boy, like the bug. But yeah, it is what it is. That's another thing we'll have to figure out.
Is there anything we missed in episode one that we need to bring up? Because I feel like we did cover like 99% of it just in character talk. I'm just reading through the notes real quick.
And the biggest part is going to end up being kind of just them on the ship. And then I guess they do have the conversation, like Mara and the little boy are now, but that's still on the ship. So yeah, the ending of episode one is just them looking around the ship. We didn't bring up that. Find the little boy in the cupboard. And then we get to see who we find out later is Daniel. He climbs up on that little observation deck, quote unquote, where they left from, like the lifeboat drop down point. And then the little boy unwraps that pyramid and hands it to Mara. And that's kind of everything for the most part that happens. Because they find the telegraph machine that's busted, which is also an interesting thing, because like how are the signals getting sent out?
Well, like, I took that like Daniel smashed it and then jumped off the boat and swam over, but it's a long swim, man.
It is. Not even a serious comment. It's a comment and a question to you two of when they're like squatting up to get off of the lifeboat and onto the ship. And he tells Big Beard, I put him in my notes as Big Beard, the ball guy with the big beard. Where he's like, you stay and wait. And if we're not back in an hour, like, go get help.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, I would almost rather go onto the ship.
No, I would too, dude.
Then sit.
Yeah.
Then just sit on this boat, just floating in the middle of the dark ocean. I mean, like, the other boat is like right there, but I would not want to just twiddle my thumbs for an hour.
Well, the other thing that's hilarious is the captain literally goes, oh, like, get up there. And he literally just jumps on the ladder and starts climbing. I'd be like, dude, you go first, man. But I mean, this also does foreshadow, like, the mutinous situation, you know, he's pissed that Jerome gets to go and he doesn't, meaning big bald beard guy. You know, he's upset that he's saying, I've been working this bow for 12 years. I rank higher than him. And Jerome too, like, he doesn't take any shit, man. Like, the guy starts being like, no, get back here. And he's about to throw down. So it's definitely the foreshadowing of the boat or the crew not being too happy with the captain. And we get to that too later when he says they're turning around.
To me, it was just like an expert level setting pilot of a mystery like this. And that's pretty much what I texted you guys after. It's just like, you get all of these players, you get just enough amount of mystery, you get just these trickles of visions and these symbolisms and red herrings all over the place. I was just so ready to go. And I thought episode two was significantly better. And I liked episode one a lot. Mm-hmm, so we can talk about that. But the only thing I want to bring up that I think might be worth mentioning that we didn't talk about is, which we didn't get anything in episode two about either, is Lucien, the French guy, has a moment when he, after the all hands on deck meeting, like that happens in the middle of the episode, he runs out and then reaches for like meds and he's like starting to shake. So I don't know how that comes into play or if that's going to like matter that much, but just something to note.
Yeah. I think he also almost more than anyone else, maybe not more than anyone else, but he's again someone that like is desperate to get to New York. Mm-hmm, like they said, they're going to stop and he's like freaking out. Cause maybe, like you said, maybe he only has a limited supply of Tommy Shelby opium.
Yeah.
I guess the Shelby business unlimited isn't in business at this point. Cause we're pre-World War One, or are we? Who knows?
Where are we?
We're going to leave episode one, I guess, in a little bit of the rear view and try to jump into kind of big plot mysteries that get introduced to us in episode two to throw it out there as a bone to kind of chew on and maybe lead to other things. Just the beginning of episode two.
Yeah.
It's like a dream, but it's a dream inside of a dream. Where,
it's Inception, dude.
Yeah. It's like he wakes up in the forest and now, you know, we get the, not even the flashback, but the house is engulfed in flames and he's calling after his family. And then he gets woken up by Mara saying, wake up,
right?
Not in the room. So I thought that was very interesting as well. Why is he hearing Mara's voice too, on top of his daughter's voice? And then we get the thing that the compass is kind of going haywire. So I don't know if that kind of set anything off for you guys
That actually triggered something in my head right now, is like, what if they're all just straight up just mental patients in an asylum and like the cabins are the rooms.
Shadow Island, dude.
Again, yeah, but the cabins are the rooms. Mara's leading the escape to get out, like with the help of her brother, and like she's trying to get the captain on board. Like, wake up, let's go. We gotta get out. Cause that was just triggered by what you said. That would be crazy.
I mean, so yeah, I mean that goes back to the point where like her going back to her room. Oh, Jesus. Nice squeak there, baby.
Let's go.
Her going back to her room is the same room number in her flashback of like the whatever it is, the mental institution. I took it like it was where her father was experimenting on her or whatever it is. We could talk about that too, because we get, in a little bit, we get to a little bit of a mystery of the panel at the bottom of his under his bed, the captain. But that is cool. I mean, I don't know. If it's that, it has to have some kind of twist on that, because I feel like they wouldn't do full on Shutter Island. I mean, it's only Leo's character that's believing he's not in the mental institution. But that's a cool idea. I didn't really think of it that way. Whoa. But also, if we go to the end and, you know, jumping ahead with like the video screens, it's like they're being watched
even more
in the institution. But I feel like that is almost like now that you're saying it, almost like what Kyle was saying, where it's like a straight line that are we really going to figure out the whole show in two episodes? Yeah. But like, it's crazy. It's really crazy.
That's so great that you bring up that I said that, because I was just going to say that it seems too easy. Like it's too simple that they are just almost all on the boat just heading to New York. And then they happen upon the ship, you know? That seems too easy.
And they all, meaning all the main characters, need to get out.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to be away from where they are.
These motherfuckers.
Now I'm getting even more like Lost vibes. Like, what if it's just Purgatory or some shit like that? Oh my God.
Well, you know,
so
they won't
possibility.
Do that, because people will freak out if they do that one. But it's similar. Yeah. It could be something like that. But yeah, it's funny that like when I say that seems to throw in a bone straight line, like Kyle said, I mean that to people like us. There's the casual viewer can watch this show right now and not even think twice that it has anything to do with a mental institution the way you did, Luke. But because we dive deep and we're podcasters about TV shows. You say that and I'm going, oh my God, you're freaking right, dude. This is simple. How did I not know that?
And also,
it's right there.
Yeah, it's right in front of my face this entire time, dude.
It also kind of reminded me just the scenes where like we're walking the hallways and going to our rooms and stuff. And it just, I'm in the middle of watching. I just started White Lotus season 2 last night. It just reminds me of that, of like all the crazy shit going on inside the hotel. And like, there's a lot of scenes of people just like walking like out of their rooms, down the hallway, passing other people in the hallway, going somewhere else. And then they coming back to their rooms and, you know, people are fucking around in their rooms and like them coming back is always like, you know, get your heart rate going a little bit. And
I'm literally trying to think right now who the non VIPs could be if they're in an institution. You know what
like
I mean?
Who would like the be ones running, that are actually like part of up. The workers?
No, the Danes that are in the non-VIPs, like the ones that aren't allowed to walk around, are they like the murderer people that
they're going to get lobotomized?
Oh, wow. That's such a good point where he's like, yeah, like you can't come up here. But even the captain says to Mara when he's like, there's rules on this ship and, you know, like you can't break them or whatever.
Right,
and
then she to be down there.
Yeah. And she questions him of like, who made the rules and who are they for?
Right.
And yeah, that could just be to create order on the ship. But also, if we're going to take this, you know, asylum theory, if we want to string it out to everything that we've seen, that would also be an interesting thing.
And last thing I'll say on this asylum stuff, maybe not even connected to that. This could be its own thing. I see her room number and it's 1011, right?
Mm-hmm.
1011.
Yep.
To me, that just like sticks out as like computer language, Braille. Could it be
either
as something, as meaning letters in some way? I don't really know. I was just saying that because I feel like it's not enough digits for it to actually be a word or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just something.
It's obviously important, though.
Yeah. The room directly above her is the French couple, right? That was the 2011. That was when Jerome broke in. That was them, right?
I do believe so, yes.
Yeah. Sounds okay. Right. And then next to her is Daniel.
Yes, he takes up residence in 1013, which, again, I mean, we can just go all over the place. And we have been, which has not been a bad thing. But with 1013, him just like taking that room goes right to when the captain is speaking to the first mate. And he's like, there's something going on, like, because he's like, that's 45,000 tons of like seaworthy steel. And, you know, this route is the only other route and we don't have full cargo and the cabins aren't all taken. Like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah, he could literally just go on and just take a cabin.
This is probably even more tinfoily than
I'll bring it than, to me.
No, it's not even that good. I was just going to say I was going to say it earlier, but when you see Daniel and he has the trench coat, he reminded me of the captain's outfit, you know, that he wears. And I was like, well, is he the captain of the other ship? I don't think they would recognize each other because it's not like have a water cooler that they can hang out and talk to each other at the company when they're not on their ships. But because when I saw the captain, he had like trenchish coat kind of thing with the collars popped. I made a note of it. And then Daniel has one that looks just like that with the collars popped. And I was like, all right, well, maybe he's the captain of the other
That's
ship.
Fair. He also,
I like that idea.
Yeah. The captain also mentions that there was, they mentioned that it used to be, I guess, a German company, and then an English company bought them but kept the German staff. And the captain kind of mentions that there was a strike. So I mean, that might come into play. I mean, Daniel was the captain and they just had never met him because, you know, they changed the ownership and maybe some people did get shuffled around and who knows. It could be anything. But he seems like he has a higher calling than just being a ship captain.
I was saying the captain of the Prometheus, meaning he's part of whatever that weirdness is. If you're the captain of it, then you're definitely higher up on whatever the company's doing with the sketchiness.
Let's transition this into talking a little bit about the boy, because that's the name of episode 2 is the boy. Mm-hmm. And I think Daniel's main goal is either something to do with Mara or something to do with the boy. Those seem to be like the only two leading theories right now, especially because the boy is posted up in Mara's room 1011. First, I would exercise this motherfucker. I would kill him in 2 seconds. I wouldn't even.
I literally Holy wrote shit. Down that little kids have such a higher capacity for creepiness.
Oh, yeah.
It's like crazy. Bro,
when he grabs her fucking arm, I'm popping you right in the fucking face. I don't care.
Oh, my God. Literally, I'm telling you right now, the way that they had that shot where he's super quick and then makes the face at her, I was like, whoa, dude, this kid's creepy as hell.
Yeah.
If and he's then not when, already creepy enough.
When she's looking through his jacket in the beginning of episode two, and she finds the little ring in the coat pocket or whatever, and then she leaves the room and he immediately opens his eyes. I was like, this little fucking rat was just awake the whole time.
So what was that? What do we think about the ring?
It was Daniel's when he's older in the future.
Does he have a ring? Does he have a ring?
No, I'm just saying, like, it looked like a ring that would only fit an adult, obviously. So I'm saying it's an adult ring.
Yeah. And she interrogates him, too, when she's asking. Obviously, this is over multiple scenes, but, like who put him in the cupboard? Like, someone, he had help. To continue with the idea of the boy and him being kind of creepy, I really like the scene with Oleg and the other coal shovelers, where they're kind of speculating on what the deal with the little boy is and everything. And they're like, where'd everyone go? And then when the guy's like, maybe it was wolves. And he's like, where the fuck would there be wolves on this ship?
Yeah.
He's like, well, maybe there was one giant wolf. He says, maybe the boy is the wolf.
Yeah.
And that immediately, like, okay, that was a line that was put there on purpose. Like, yeah, there's something
we're playing
up
werewolves here, dude. We're playing the game werewolves.
Pretty much.
But I mean, I was laughing because the first thing that the guy says isn't, why would there be werewolves on the ship? It's there's not enough werewolves to kill 1,000 people. Or I'm saying werewolves. Wolves. Yeah. There's not enough wolves to kill 1,000 people. And then he says, well, what if it's a really big wolf? It's like, what is going on right now?
Well, they're just shoveling coal. They probably didn't have much schooling.
Yeah.
But that line was definitely put in there purposefully. I love that image of the boy, obviously not being a wolf, but like, clearly having some involvement in the disappearance of the passengers, and it seems now super obvious.
Yes.
And
yes.
The way that the captain reacted after he wakes up from the visions and just sprints into Mara's room, he was asking all the right questions. He chokes him out and like puts him on the wall. He's like, what was going on here? Tell me what happened to the passengers, blah, 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 like talk. He was asking all the right questions. And that's exactly how I would have treated this, because he can clearly, there's 700 languages on this ship. Someone can speak whatever he is. Like, let's just get some words out of him. So Mara, of course, being the main character that doesn't want the audience to know information, stops him, basically, or like kind of guilts him into feeling bad about that.
Yeah, she says it herself. Like, she doesn't even know if he can understand her language. You know, he doesn't give anything. So we have no idea. German, English, Danish, whatever it is, we have no idea.
He just keeps pointing to the pyramid. The pyramid little thing. That's going to be so important.
So right before the captain kind of barges in and asks all those questions, he has another vision scene, I guess, when he's kind of walking through the hallways. Like that door just creaks open. Naturally, he goes in, I guess, because the plot has to progress, but you would never fucking catch me going in that fucking door.
Yeah, right.
And I just I like how like the song keeps playing to him, and that's when he gets him to do weird shit. And I like that in the subtitles it says an eerily jaunty song. It's just like a funny little description of the song. I don't know what to think of this fucking scene of where he goes through and it glitches and he's with his family. And it's clearly like he doesn't have a connection with his wife so much as his one daughter, Nina.
Right.
And that seems important at the same time. I'm not really sure what to think of this.
So I mean,
he is Shutter Island. He is the one for one Shutter Island. Like,
so
what's going on?
Yeah, so it's important to note that when he moves in the hallucination, he's moving on the ship, because when he pops out of the hallucination, he has done some movement on the ship, because that's how we get to the tunnel that gets him to under his cabin. And I'm thinking, when I see the tunnel and him crawling through that tunnel, I was thinking of Dark. You know, it is crazy that we're having this Prometheus situation, and the daughter's ribbon that we see in the hallucination is physical. And that's another thing going to the whole, you know, it is a mental institution and he still has that from his daughter, and that's just showing up in his hallucination, but it is physical that he has in the institution. You know, I don't know how much we want to keep pushing that, but I mean, it is obviously very important that he's somehow finding something physical from his dead daughter that had nothing to do with the Prometheus.
Because at first I thought that his wife was Nina. And then then the wife stands up and is like, I'll go warm up dinner. And then they have like he has an actual conversation with Nina. I thought it was interesting the line where she says that she's tried to talk to the mom about like how and I'm butchering this paraphrase, but essentially, like, it's almost like the song Brandy or whatever from Guardians of the Galaxy, where, like, you can't wrangle someone who's in love with the sea. Like, he always has to leave and come back. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, that seems to be maybe building up a level of guilt for him. It's right. Like, he kind of forced, not forced her, but, like, he played a role, obviously, in her killing herself and the children.
Nina says the shadows go away when you're home. You know, yeah. they get worse when you leave. And yeah, like you were saying, it's, you can't wrangle somebody back in. You just got to hope that they'll come back to you.
Yeah. So that, I think that's just, they're putting that idea in our heads. I'm just kind of interested to see where that goes further. And then just to kind of connect, we were talking about the little boy, and then we kind of jumped to now the captain getting us to that, the outburst that he has, which we all agree, and Luke especially, that we should have just been popping that little boy and letting the captain get after it. But Mara obviously steps in. But did we mention that Daniel and the boy make eye contact?
No, but I definitely wanted to, because when he's creepy as hell, Daniel is always just waiting at her door, and he has something to say, and she literally always is not rude, but she just responds real quick and says, "Get out of my face, con," and just goes in her room. And when she cracks the door, they look at each other.
That has to play a role. They're from the ship, man. So they have something. I want to know if they're working together or not.
You have to think of it in like two ways. Is it he didn't want the little kid to get to the other ship and that's why he locked him away? Or is it just a piece of the puzzle where he locked him away on purpose so Mora can find him and bring him over to the ship and they're working together? I mean, there's two ways to go about it. It's
they're working together for sure, because the beetle is what leads them to the boy, and he controls, and Daniel controls the beetle. We've seen that like three times now.
But then again, he had the beetle when he gets on to the ship. Is there more than one beetle?
It seems like there has to be.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, either way, I don't think it changes that it's like a tool for him somehow.
Yeah, no, right. It just seems like every time he uses the beetle, he takes it out of his pocket, uses it, puts it back in his pocket. The one with Mora is one of the only ones where it was used where we don't think he was actually on the boat.
Maybe it was the little boy's beetle.
Ooh, I like it. Like, they're competing beetles. Like the,
yeah. Yeah. It did lead right back to him. So maybe it was going back to him.
Yeah. And it's also funny because the boy doesn't talk. So he just like bangs once on the door. And then everyone's like, "Oh, Jesus." And then they open the door. It's like he's not saying help, of course. He's not banging multiple times, "Let me out." He just bangs like once or twice.
And it's also, I think, it's an interesting angle, too, of Mara is obviously taking the role of taking care of the little boy. She's kind of doting on him a little bit. We do find out, I believe it's in episode one, that she can't have children.
Yes.
Oh, I'm interested in that dynamic as well.
And that was another flashback.
Yeah.
You know, Ada asks her and she has a little flash and says, "I can't have kids."
Yeah. And I mean, just going again with the asylum, like, what role, like, is Daniel like the head orderly? Like, what is, like, what do you think his role, and a little boy, like, what are
you gonna sucker punch now?
And what, yeah, and what's the point?
I like that.
And what's the point of like killing someone? What's the symbolism of Ada being dead in a mental institution by Daniel, because he says like, "I'm so sorry," and then she dies.
Lobotomy.
I'm trying to think of like things that I would be the most upset at, and I don't think I'll be upset at all about this TV show, but like, if there's any type of like VR simulation stuff, I think that would be, that right now feels like the worst answer.
I agree with that, because when you're in a mental institution, the people believe it's real. The hallucinations they're seeing, where, you know, if they think they're on a boat and it's 1899, they believe they're on a boat and it's 1899. I feel like those conversations, like, more, is she in VR? Like, how do you like fake her out that much by VR?
Yeah, I think that would be one of, I think, the worst answers for me. But obviously there's way more episodes left for them to play it out. And I'm just also just interested too that, like we said, the boy doesn't talk. That plays into the fact that Mora just doesn't shut up around him. I feel like she's spilled all of her beans to this little boy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe he'll use that information maliciously, or maybe he already knew it about the brother and the envelope has the symbol on it and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we also, Luke, you brought up him grabbing her hand, but we didn't say why. And it's because she moves his hair and that's where the symbol shows up tattooed behind his ear.
There's some fuckery going on here. Like, clearly, like, I'm all in, and I didn't think of it. I thought of it when I think it was Jimmy that said it. Like, I think Daniel and the boy are working together now, because I do think it's too red herring and like unlike the writers, to make it where they're one, where they are the same person. I just don't think we're going to go that route. I think it's way more likely that it's something to do with like a mental institution than to just kind of copy and paste some of the dark formula. Whatever they got going on, I think, like, yeah, I totally think that they're on the same team now.
The best part's going to be in 6 more episodes. It's going to be episode 8, and we're going to go, dude, how hilarious were those theories that we thought were fully right by episode 2 of this show?
I can't wait for it to be like, just like they're actually there 100%. There's like no actual mystery, like just something crazy like that, like completely subverting every expectation we had. Luke had mentioned this too earlier, that the symbol is on the floor in the carpet. And that, beyond the actual ending of episode 2, I feel like that was the second most like, what the fuck scene when that happened. Mm-hmm, it was very casually done. He just puts the beetle on the ground and I was like, the symbol.
Yeah. I mean, the symbol being around, I just think the weirdest one right now is still the French girl. I still want to know why she wears those earrings and if she's a part of it. But the carpet was crazy. And obviously the mini secret passage under the bed has the carving on it. And even going in there, it was like marble. Wasn't he like grabbing at it, like feeling at it, and it was marble?
Yeah, it didn't seem like hastily scratched in with like a butter knife.
And of course, you know, we have people knocking at the door and he's like, oh shit, I have to go up there and Oleg's going to sandbag me here. But, you know, I want to know what's in there, man. That's sweet.
What my current guess is now, because like you see the symbol on the carpets, like I just think the symbol is basically the equivalent of the company ownership of these two ships. And maybe at some level, Clementine, whatever her name is.
Yeah.
I think she could be,
she went to the gift shop.
She could be part of the family ownership of the company. Like she could be involved in like owning it. Like this could, if this is all part of something, like at the end, when we see the screens, I think she could totally be in on it more. I think she's a higher chance of being in on it than almost anybody else yet.
Yeah. And Lucien does say to her, the husband, where he's like, no one's watching. Like you can drop the act. Like your parents aren't here. I mean, turns out people are watching on the screens at the end.
Well, hold on. Let's get to that, because should we just clean up any of these other little interactions that aren't Captain Ike or Mara? Because I think we pretty much talked about a lot of them. Tom Marilyn, the Danish priest, he's given that little speech. We already talked about Angel and Crestor's interaction, and then the sister comes in. Like we already cleaned that up.
Yeah, Jerome's been locked away.
Right. Ling Yi and Lucien have that weird interaction when Mrs. Wilson shows up. I think we mentioned it, but I don't really know if there's anything else to say there.
He's an OG weeb.
I thought that he was a little mean to Mrs. Wilson, dude.
Yeah, he was like, never. I'd never be that desperate.
Never in my life would I be that desperate. It's like, she's not that.
No, she's not. That's ridiculous. Yeah. And I guess Jimmy did mention it, but we do get multiple scenes of the crew having conversations behind Captain Ike's back, questioning him, questioning what they should actually do. They do say, the Big Beard does say, you know, like they should have let him go after the tragedy. Like you can't, you know, kind of recover from that. The first mate seems to be, he's kind of losing his trust in the captain.
The Adam Driver. Like, or are you talking about the other one? Oh, no. Sorry, that's the other one.
Yeah, that's the
fucking
the other
guy that looks like Adam Driver.
Yeah. and they do have, at the end of this, they have a conversation that, like, we should just sink the boat ourselves. Like, they might just go rogue and sink Prometheus.
And I don't even think we actually explicitly said that they got a message from the company saying sink ship.
True.
Now, and that's the craziest thing. And we talked about almost everything around it. We just didn't bring up that. Like he goes to Oleg and says, yo, on the DL, get me those answers about the coal. He's saying this to himself with Mara. He's saying, why do they want me to sink this ship? You know, this is really sketchy. There's a lot of sketchiness to this. And the other thing is that they see for a while that they're trying to get in touch with the company and they're saying like radio silence from the company. And then the first thing they say is only sink ship. And then so obviously the captain right now thinks like this trip was specifically for that. And they knew where it was. Mm-hmm. Is that where
top
you guys
of the compass is freaking out? That's all happening around this time, too, where you can't really get a good.
I think that's interesting that you're saying that. Yeah, the whole point that they sent out the Cerberus was so that it would find Prometheus and sink it. Yeah, because he does say like, hey, you know, we don't have a ton of freight. Like this is not a profitable route right now at all. Like the company's losing money sending us to New York right now.
That's how I took it.
Yeah, no, I think that was a good way, I think, to read between those lines for sure. Well, the captain does say, like, the current would have taken the ship south, but
it shouldn't be where it is.
Yeah, but it's north. So, like, how is that possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the weird thing here that we have to get answered is, how did Daniel survive for 4 months on the ship? How this little kid, where the hell is all the crewmates, the people on the ship, the 1,000 people on the ship? And my other question is that what a ship would look like after 4 months of being
definitely not.
So you took it like, again, it could have been like a time travel thing where it's been sitting there for years or something.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, where they didn't find any bodies.
Not one body.
So yeah, we're going to.
And they found Nina's actual ribbon, dude. What's going on here?
Yeah, has she ever been on a boat before? Maybe she has been on a boat. I don't know.
Let's just jump right to the all hands on deck meeting part two. That's kind of like the last like clip of scenes when he just tells them we're towing this back to Europe, walks out. I mean, I guess, again, we did really cover all this because we did have the Angel and Ramiro scene. We talked about that. That kind of confirmed what we probably were thinking along the end of episode one. What else? The Dane, the little Dane gets led and killed by Daniel. He says, "I'm so sorry," which means that he is doing it for a very, very specific reason.
Right, right. The whole entire crew and all the passengers don't want to go back. They think it's stupid. They think it's not what should be done. So I feel like the captain's definitely going to have to deal with like some kind of mutiny situation at some point. Mm-hmm. This is going to be skipping towards the end a little bit, but
I'm working at the end right now.
Exactly. So we have Angel and Ramiro in the room, and they start doing the damn thing, and then it zooms in on the painting. Like, when I say these things in my head, I don't think that it's the answer, right? But I was like, is somebody watching? Like, is there like a peephole or something? You know, because they all keep saying no one's watching, and they even say it in that room again. They're like, you know, no one's in here. It's just us or whatever. So I took it like someone was watching. Now, I didn't take it like there's a camera in the painting, but I thought there was like a peephole and people are being watched on the ship. Now, what's the reason for that? I don't know.
Now that you say that too, just like even the word camera, were they actually filming things at this level in 1899?
No, that's why I'm saying it's not 1899. That's the joke. That's what I'm saying. There's no way that they're filming anything. I mean, we're talking about silent films almost, like, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
When's Charlie Chaplin been a thing? Like,
isn't that like the
1900s?
The first movie? The first
probably
movie
the early
ever.
1900s. Like,
ooh,
the
first movie ever, 1888.
that's a film movie. That's not a live feed of a ship.
Do you want to know how long it was? It was 2.11 seconds long.
Nice. I wonder if it was good.
Yeah. Actually,
we should binge it.
It might be. I might be looking at the wrong thing. Yeah, we do a whole podcast episode on the first movie we ever made. That's a good point, though. And again, with when you said always watching, too, it reminded me of when Mara is talking to the little boy and she recalls that moment from her past that her father, who's this mysterious figure that they're kind of pushing on us a little bit, has left her in the woods overnight. And she has an interesting answer about it where she's like, I wasn't mad that he left me or lied to me. I was mad that I thought I wasn't being watched for the first time, but I was.
Right. He took that away from me.
Yeah, and that was a very interesting answer, mm-hmm. I thought, because it's like that. Mm-hmm. You feel like automatically you'd be mad that he lied or that he literally left her in the woods for the night. But no, it was all about the fact that she thought that she was alone but wasn't.
I don't know, man. That was what I was saying. Is it really 1899? Like, the video feed thing is definitely weird. I mean, the video feed thing can't be real for a long time. So,
like the 90s, like the 80s.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So
it was colored.
I saw the pan to the painting and I said, you know, is there people? And then they pull out to the video feed and I was like, everything's changed. My entire thought process is different.
Yes.
I was like, oh my gosh. The entire thing changed right here. I don't know what the hell is going on.
My last note just says, what the fuck?
Dude, mine says, holy fucking shit, full body chills on the screen. Like, this is insane.
Yeah. Well, because I feel like the look. Again, we just talked about everything and my emotions are high, but was the look, like the camera angle for the captain, was dead on, right? Or was it from above?
No, it was his face. Like,
yeah.
And Daniel led him to that spot to be inside of the video.
Fuck yeah, because he does say, he says sorry to Ada.
This is when he is going to see that Ada's dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing we see from the captain. Yeah, this could be like the Hunger Games, where they're just like many cameras all over the place, and they're just being watched, and it's actually they're in a dome right now, and it's the Hunger Games.
And it's countries instead of the it's countries instead of districts.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why he's like, you're Portuguese, not Spanish, you fucker.
Yeah, you can't represent Spain in the Hunger Games.
This scene took this to the next level, and like, I was expecting it to get to the next level, but like already, my whole perception, like you're saying, Jimmy, just flipped like in a second. Like this is not. To me, I mean, I guess it still could be the insane asylum even more now.
Yeah, well, that's what made me go even more so after you said it. Like, I didn't think about it until you said it. But then when you said it, I was like, the cameras, like, oh, my gosh. I don't think anymore. When I was going into this and I was watching even episode 1.5, I was like, this could be easily just some kind of like creepy ghost ship, certain spot. You know, like basically like saying what you said, Luke, the Bermuda Triangle situation. They're just telling a story about what could happen in a weird spot in the world or something. But now with the cameras and all this kind of stuff, there's just totally different, totally different. Yeah. And we're going to be talking at the finale being like, oh my gosh, we thought it was freaking an insane asylum or something.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything left in me.
My final tinfoil theory. Yeah. For it?
Yeah. Let me hear it.
This takes place in the dark universe and we're going to get some level of connection at the fucking end of the season. That'd be amazing.
That would be sweet. And we can't say what kind of connection it could be without spoilers, but damn,
it can't, it won't be, but
I would cry.
Yeah. It would be awesome.
That'd be crazy.
I think I would cry. Yeah.
I guess it can't be because the actors, but
yeah. All right. Is that all she wrote? Nothing. Nothing else anyone wants to throw onto the wall before we can finally watch episodes 3 and 4.
I want to say rip to Ada, man. They gave us a nice little character right there, and it's definitely made us sad that she was killed off. You know, she was a little child that wanted to become a doctor, and they hardly gave her any scenes, but you actually felt something for when she got killed off and when Daniel says, "I'm so sorry."
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know,
good for them.
Yeah, she was like the good one. She was one of the good ones, for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It goes against almost Luke's point that all of like the good working class people usually make it to the end.
Yeah, right.
Ada gets clipped episode 2. But
she's the first clip.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how the family responds. They're very religious.
Exactly.
They did mention Anchor, aka Tom Maryland, aka the priest, does say that Tova's baby, her pregnancy, he said it's God's child, and at first I was like, whoa, what's going on with that? But I'm thinking it could just be they're just religious. So
I just think it's the religious.
When I first heard it, it made me think that like they were thinking there was something really special about her baby,
right,
like some type of prophesized baby. And I could be definitely reading too much high fantasy in my life. But
no, that would be awesome too.
That's the way I'm taking it, because it's more
the
fun.
Princess that was promised, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Daniel's reasoning for bringing the cat, like the attention to this little dead daughter, this little dead Danish girl, is either for the camera purposes and like he's like aware of all this, like, and is trying to facilitate whatever's going on there, or it is to actually start inciting the mutiny riots and make the Danish people start freaking out and cause that rift? So
that's
it could
true.
Be either one of the two, but that seems a little bit like, I guess that could be the answer of why he killed her.
I mean, does he want to just turn the Severus into the Prometheus? But why?
Also could be that. Right, and then right, it just right, like right. is a rinse and repeat. And then like at the
he
end,
he feeds
like,
off
he
the souls of the,
next
of the travelers, dude.
Ooh, I actually wouldn't hate that. Because where'd the bodies go?
I mean, we also have the whole situation where if we're wondering if he's trying to make this riff a thing, like, you know, you make the Danish people pissed. Then you make the crew members mutinous. Then you make the passengers pissed. I mean, he even does go to Moore and he's like, yo, this captain doesn't know what he's doing. We should not be turning around here. So whether he's trying to plant that seed in her head and piss her off, or if he's actually like, doesn't want him to turn around, I don't know. Like, does he want the ship to blow up or see the way that the company wants it to? It's just too much, man. It's much right now.
It does seem like the only, I think, inkling of motivation we have is all centered around Mara. He has the picture of her. He knows where her room is. He shacks up next to her. He's always by her door asking her questions. So it's got to be something with Mara.
Yeah.
Which, and her big thing, now that she said that to us, is about being watched. So yeah, it seems like he might be involved with the whole cameras thing. All right, so that is our coverage of episodes 1 and 2 of 1899 dropping on Netflix. These shows are kind of tough for us, like we mentioned in the beginning, that everyone can just binge them. So if you're following along with us, we appreciate you. Thanks for being part of the Bingetown team. We cover a ton of other shows. We just got done wrapping, House of the Dragon, Rick and Morty's coming back. Jesus, Vampire Academy just ended. We did that. I mean, almost every show you can think of, obviously, besides Dark, like we talked about in the beginning. You can follow us on our socials at Bingetown TV on Twitter and Instagram, YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe. If you are not, feel free to comment. We try to get to all of them. We'd love to hear your theories about everything. Tell us why we're idiots. Tell us why we're geniuses. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever else you're on, subscribe. You'll get notifications immediately when we drop these episodes. So then you can know that these idiots are talking about 1899 again. there's three of us right now. There's seven of us total in Bingetown. I would assume we'll be joined by others, so we can get some more variety, maybe in theories. They might come on and tell us we're dumb for something. They'll catch some things, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So that's all I got. Yeah, thanks for listening. And stay tuned for episodes 3 and 4.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.